Friday, June 5th, was a day divided between memories of Nehru, lunch with the Shah of Iran and his beautiful empress, and dinner with the John Steinbecks. A full, wonderful day. But it began first with reading about Linda's and Lucy's activities yesterday with the Young Citizens for Johnson. Senator Birch Bayh of Indiana and his lovely wife Marvella were the spark plugs in a standing room only rally in the Senate caucus room yesterday for the formation of Young Citizens for Johnson. Labor, sports, politics, and the arts were all represented by young people with famous names, so the New York Times said. Beautiful Charlotte Ford, the daughter of Henry Ford II, across the table from her, nice counterpoint this was. John Reuther, son of labor leader Victor Reuther, and Bobby Mitchell of the Redskins football. Pianist Peter Duchin, Mayor Robert Wagoner's son, Bob Jr. Lucy and Linda were on hand to show their appreciation for the group's formation. I was delighted at what the Times said about Lucy. This is tremendous, chortled Lucy Baines Johnson. School's out, there's so much excitement. Then she did what any other teenager would do in a crowd of young celebrities, senators, representatives, and statesmen. She bounced up and down with a wide grin. I was impressed and pleased that Charlotte Ford said, I'll do anything they want me to do, type, pass out cards, anything. Also, she said that she had made up her mind to vote for Lyndon before her father, longtime Republican, announced that he favored him. The setting for the memorial service for Nehru was fittingly solemn and grand in the National Cathedral. Lyndon and I went in with Dean and Virginia Rusk and Mrs. B.K. Nehru. The boys' choir filed in, and behind them, handsome B.K. Nehru, his face a stern mask, Ellsworth Bunker, once our ambassador to India, and Dean Sayre. Assembled were a great many of the diplomatic corps, including Lord and Lady Harlech, the Soviet ambassador Dobrynin, and the dean of the corps, Sevilla Sakasa. And the court and the cabinet was well represented. Though I did not feel close to him when I met him in life, I was keenly aware that in death he left a tenser world. He had literally carried India on his shoulders for several decades. One profile of him called him the Magnificent Pretender. Ellsworth Bunker said that he had given the world so much in thought, word, and deed that we are all much richer for him. He also said that bits of poetry he liked were written down in shorthand on a pad on his desk. Among them, Robert Frost's, "The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep." The most moving thing to me was the complete sorrow on the face of Mrs. B.K. Nehru, herself not an Indian at all, Hungarian, but a convert to their religion and to their life, and a very close friend of Nehru's. For me, the major event of the day was the luncheon for the Shah of Iran. Handsome, intense, gray-templed, his name appears often on lists of the most attractive men in the world, his beautiful empress, Farah Diba, serene, slow-eyed, statuesque. I greeted them on the north portico, and we went upstairs together with the ambassador of Iran and Mrs. Farooji, and Mr. Alam, who was prime minister when last I saw him, and now is chancellor of Pahlavi University, and Dean and Virginia Rusk, and Angie and Robin Duke. Lyndon was late, but this is being a rough week for him. They had brought us a beautiful Persian rug, and when I inquired from what province it came and the story behind the design, the Shah promised to send the information to me. We had matching cowboy outfits for their four-year-old son, who was a toddler when I had seen him in Tehran, and to whom we had brought a cowboy outfit at that time, and for that new year-old daughter. The luncheon had originally been designed as a stag luncheon, and when the Empress decided to come, only a few days earlier, we simply invited the wives of the men already on the list, which totaled 124. From the court, there was Justice and Mrs. Stewart. From the Hill, Mary Ellen Monroney and Mike, and the Ralph Yarbroughs, the Cy Vances, the Carl Rowans, our old friend Ben Cohen, the Bob Comers, and I was glad to get the chance to tell him how lucid and compact and helpful his memoranda and recommendations were being for Lyndon. Anne and Oscar Chapman, the Tex Goldsmiths, who had spent several years in Iran, and Dr. and Mrs. James Halsted, she is Anna Roosevelt Halsted, daughter of FDR, and Dr. Halstead had worked for a charity in Iran for several years. The president of the Ford Foundation, Mr. Henry Heald, Dave Lilienthal, and his wife. He had designed the network of dams, which will, when completed, outstrip the TVA, and the Leonard Marks, who's the director of the Iran-America Society, and who had spent some time in Iran lecturing at a university, and outlining the way they can make TV a part of their battle against illiteracy, and Jerry and Helene Siegel, and of course our old friend the John Walkers, because it is at the National Gallery of Art where the magnificent Iranian exhibit is taking place. I was so sorry that the Paul Mellons regretted. I don't want to ever lose an opportunity to express my appreciation to Mrs. Mellon. I had the Shah on my right and Mr. Alam on my left, and it was a fascinating luncheon from my standpoint. I hope that Lyndon enjoyed the Empress, and she's certainly beautiful enough as much. The Shah's eyes light up, and he gets lyric when he talks about the dams and the irrigation. I asked him how they were progressing. He said three dams were already built, and a fourth is being built. His aim is one dam per year. I laughed and told him that was exactly the aim my husband had during his 12 years in the Senate. The marvelously rich irrigated land, the result of these dams, is used to produce alfalfa and wheat mostly, but they have recently begun an experiment in raising sugarcane, which is proving remarkably successful. As we looked at the nuts in our nut dish, he asked me if I liked pistachios, and I said I adored them, and I had never eaten such good pistachios as in his country. There they opened easily to the touch. Here I break all my fingernails trying to get into them. He smiled and said, when they're nearly open like that, we call them laughing pistachios. I was very pleased with the luncheon that Renee turned out. There were eggs Florentine, broil lobster, always a favorite with me, lattice potatoes, and puree favorite. And for dessert, strawberries Farah, which seemed to please the Empress. I asked the Shah for his signature on my luncheon card. It was M.R. Pahlavi. I think I'll keep this up at every state dinner. Sometime we'll make an interesting display if we ever have a library. I reminisced joyfully about my stay in the Marble Palace and about the model of the city of Cyrus, Darius, and Xerxes, and told him how eagerly I looked forward to seeing the exhibit at the National Gallery. There were just the strolling violins for entertainment, and then the toast, and the luncheon ended early. At 3 o'clock I was back upstairs working with Ashton and Liz. Before the event that meant the most to me in the day, that is, dinner with the Steinbecks, I can talk to two people much better than I can to 150. They arrived before dark, and I took them down into the rose garden for a stroll, and then back upstairs, and in an effort to show them what a psychologically draining job this was, for Lyndon, I picked up and read the last letter on my stack. A woman was answering a letter from Lyndon, in which he expressed sorrow at the death of her son in Vietnam. Her answer was simple, dignified, and acceptant of the fact. No bitterness, which in a way made it all the more painful from the vantage point we see it. And then Lyndon came in, and I never saw him more articulate or more interesting. Troubles are coming, not in single file, but in battalions. The Turks are going to invade Cyprus. The coal industry is angry, wants the government to quit imports of Venezuelan oil. John Steinbeck was a delightful conversationalist. He talked about his trip to Russia. One telling little incident revealed their antipathy for the Chinese. He said he and Elaine were having dinner with Rada, the daughter of Khrushchev, and her husband in their apartment. They had no servants, and when they were removing the dishes afterward, Elaine offered to help take them into the kitchen. And she remarked to Rada, "This is such beautiful China." Rada got very excited and said, "It is not China." Elaine said, "Of course I know, I recognize that it is Meissen from Germany, but in our country we call all fine dinnerware China. It's just an overall word." Apparently it's a word they don't like to hear. Steinbeck said that it is blind that we do not have relations with one quarter of the people of the earth, meaning Red China. Lyndon answered, "Mildly enough. But they ought not to be able to shoot their way in to the UN and to recognition by us." Steinbeck made a very interesting suggestion. He said it would be a good idea to invite to this country young Russian writers who object to the way their government is running. Then it would be up to their government to either permit them or not permit them. And if they did come, he hoped in their visit we would give them every opportunity to see us as we were, our best and our worst. He also told a delightful story about when he was a war correspondent in Norway and he became interested in helping with their underground. Danish ships were bringing out Norwegians, and the Germans were trying to catch them doing it, and in the process used dogs to enter the ships and search out human beings that might be hidden in inaccessible portions of the ship. He, Steinbeck, suggested sprinkling cocaine powder all along the gangplanks. The dogs just got happy going up, and they couldn't smell a thing from then on. They brought us a most unique and remarkable gift, one that I shall give up with pain, but I shall give it up because it is inscribed, given to the White House Library in the time of Lyndon Johnson, John Steinbeck. It is a bound copy of the Atlantic Monthly, dated 1862, that has the first published battle hymn of the Republic. You know, containing the lines, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. They are trampling out the vineyards where the grapes of wrath are stored." It was significant to him because it contains the title of what is probably his most famous book. This he doesn't know, and I didn't tell him. But long, long ago, when Lyndon and I went to see the movie Grapes of Wrath, and it affected him deeply, anchoring him emotionally to the liberal program of FDR and having a carryover all these years. I was glad Lyndon hadn't been here when the Steinbecks first came because I had gotten a chance to say my words. And they were all about Winter of Our Discontent, which I had loved. Except that I didn't see how a man so innately good could fall apart like that at the last. John said he just wanted to write a book about morality and about the effect of our present mores, our success being spelled out in money and advancements, and what it had on character. Actually, I think, at the last, the man put himself back together with a few ineradicable blots on his escutcheon. We had a really delightful evening and a chance to thank him for the best piece of writing that's ever been done about Lyndon, and which will probably be incorporated in a brochure for the Democratic Committee for distribution at the convention. It is true, it is beautiful, and I am very proud of it. He asked, "What can we do for you?" And I was quick to say, "You can keep on giving us ideas clothed in good words, help of the same high caliber of this piece of writing." Then when they started to leave, Lyndon said, "Where are you staying?" And they said, "Right across the park at the Hay Adams, so we won't take a taxi, we'll just walk." And Lyndon said, "Well, we'll go with you." So out the front door we strolled, and down the walk, and along Pennsylvania Avenue to the left, not recognized for quite a little while, and then recognized to the astonishment of the few passers-by. We crossed the street with them and said goodbye, and I'll mark this as one of the best evenings I've had in the White House.